welcome back to Season 3, Episode 8 of Teed Up, where everyone's a sports expert, the podcast that makes you care about sports. We are an original podcast created and produced by Long Beach State student-run newspaper, The Daily 49er. It's a weird episode. No host for the first time next to me. Feels out of sync, but I'm your host, Maddie G. Today I got two other hosts next to me, Desi Lopez, Zach Durham, host of Footy Friday. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, we just got done recording, so we've got plenty of footy to discuss.
Yeah, it's nice to be here, man. I'm excited to talk some footy again for the second time today.
Yeah, it's crazy. Last week we came on to Footy Friday for the first time. Now you're here in our studio.
Collaboration. That's what we're all about here.
A little crossover episode. It's what you love to see.
And so I just want to start off with how you both got into soccer as a whole.
You go ahead.
Want me to go ahead? Yeah, I think for me, the very beginning of my soccer loving days were kind of supporting the national team in the World Cup in 2010. I was still like 7 years old, so it was, you know, I was really young at that point. But it was also really fun to just watch that whole World Cup play out in South Africa, and then again 4 years later in Brazil. But I think my favorite player has always been Christian Eriksen, and that's how I kind of got into loving Tottenham, loving the Spurs, and just kind of watching Premier League back in the day. And my mom's actually from Denmark, so it's kind of fun to watch him play for his national team and for his club. But yeah, I think back in the day, that was just always my favorite player to watch. And that's kind of how I got into soccer from the very beginning.
I'd say for me, I always grew up playing like AYSO as a kid. And it took me a while to get into the sport as far as like organized professional soccer in Europe. I remember the day that I came home from GameStop with a copy of FIFA 10 with Wayne Rooney and Ronaldinho on the cover. And that's kind of where it kicked off for me. And that's where I really started investing in the Premier League. And me, also a Spurs fan, it literally came down to me liking their logo and having Gareth Bale on that team. The rest is history. I mean, it just took off from there, me investing more into the sport, not just here in MLS, but in Europe and following the Premier League, some of the greats. And then I got into the Champions League. And I'd say really since 2017 is when I started becoming like a really serious fan, where I'd like keep up with players, not just Tottenham, and just kind of seeing how they run with their careers and like who is at the top of their game, and then like just dynasties. So
yeah, you both made mention of pretty much where I got my start. I didn't play soccer at all, played hockey, but it was the 2014 World Cup. I remember U.S. national team, just seeing like how invested people got into a World Cup, because that was the first one I remember. And I was on like a flight for the Ghana game, I think, flying to Washington. Every single person on the flight had the game on, and then they scored the header to go ahead, right? It was the winning header.
It was John Donovan, Brooks. Right? Landon Donovan
against Ghana?
I thought it was John Brooks.
Oh, it was John Brooks. You're right.
And just that whole World Cup, like so many players that really have no business being talked about nowadays, like Jermaine Jones. Michael Bradley, but iconic team for me. And then it was FIFA 11 or 10 where Frank Lampard was on the cover. And for whatever reason, I was just like Chelsea through and through from that day on. Drogba, Lampard, check.
I remember back in the day, Drogba was another player that I was a huge fan, even though he played for Chelsea. but my favorite international team to play was the Ivory Coast, because they had pace, they had strength, and at the time when I didn't know a whole lot about the sport, I thought they were the best in the world. I legitimately thought that the Ivory Coast was the best team in the world. And you know, to this day, looking back, like I think they are still, in a way, just because they're the team that kind of leapfrogged my passion for the sport.
Yeah, back in those old days of FIFA, those types of teams, like I used to play with Colombia all the time, and they were going crazy back in the day. I was a big FIFA Street guy too. I don't know if you guys like FIFA Street. Back in the day, it was a I don't know, a long time ago that FIFA Street was a thing, but I used to love that game. I played it on the Wii. Ooh. Back in the day. It was wild, but yeah, I was a big FIFA Street guy.
FIFA, I think, just got so many people their start, like so many iconic players, Gervinho, S-Vine. These guys who have no club careers, really, but are so iconic just because of FIFA. And then, so going into that, just do we find it more fun to support a club or a player?
I think that if you have a club that you are passionate about, and like you, like if you're a sports fan, this might be, it's hard to say that like a team full of players that you don't know can dictate your happiness, but it's a real thing. And if you have a club like that, that will win or lose, like, affect your emotions. Like, one, may not be the best thing, but for two, as a sports fan, it's awesome. And so for that aspect, it's like, if you can invest so much into a club and root for their success, then yeah, I think you, it's fun to root for a club, but it's so cool seeing individual players like have a career. Like, I'm a huge Kevin De Bruyne fan, and I do not like Manchester City, but I do think Kevin De Bruyne is probably the greatest midfielder of our generation, and it's a blessing to be able to watch him play.
I completely agree. I also think that when you follow a player, it kind of makes it easier to follow a club because, you know, that player plays for his specific team. And, you know, if he's like the best player on his team or he's like the face of the team, it's kind of easier to follow his club, you know, if you're really into following him as a player. But yeah, I agree. I think following a club is kind of, it kind of gives you that community aspect. Like, you're a part of a bigger thing than just following one guy or, you know, whether he's going to stay on a team or not, stuff like that. So I think following a club is definitely what I would go for.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, if we were from the UK, just like the three of us sitting across from each other wouldn't go down well.
Yeah.
Tottenham, Chelsea, just like London derbies.
Two Spurs fan and a Chelsea fan and a pub in London may not go well.
Yeah. But
that's the beauty of it. And I think it's just so different over there. I think soccer in America is really just starting to take off, not just like with how we look at the U.S. men's national team or the U.S. women's national team. Shout out them on International Women's Day, by the way. But I will say that it's a community of American Premier League fans. I mean, that's kind of like an angle that they've tried to market to in recent years. And it's cool to see it take off.
Yeah, and then I know outside of the Premier, a Bayern fan, do you have teams for each league or like only invest in time for one league?
I try to have a team in each league that I really root for. I'd say Bayern are my team just because playing them and playing with them in FIFA was always an advantage. And I have a lot of close friends that are leaning towards Bayern Munich as their favorite team overall. I know they might not win the Bundesliga this year, but they're still a top threat for the Champions League, which is something that I get to enjoy because our Spurs aren't in Champions League or European football this year.
Yeah.
So that's where I start leaning towards, okay, let's see what Bayern can do.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I also think that, like, when I was first getting into soccer, as we mentioned before about FIFA, for some reason, I really like the names of, like, the German players.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always play with, like, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, and, like, specifically Borussia Dortmund. Like, I could probably name 10 or so players that played on that team in, like, 2014 just because I like their names and I like playing with them. But, yeah, I don't know. I think, for me, having, like, more than a few different clubs that I would like to support is kind of, like, it might be too much just for me because I like to support one club and either one club in a league or stuff like that. But I also think that it kind of makes sense to support one club in every league, especially if you're from Europe. You know, you have different clubs that you want to support if you're playing in Spain or you're playing in France and stuff like that. So, because they're all different leagues.
Shout out Sunderland, too. Sunderland. Always, I will always have a soft spot for Sunderland.
I think that's Stoke for me.
Yeah.
Like, doing it on a cold, rainy night in Stoke, just iconic line.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good one.
Yeah. I just want to jump over now to Footy Friday. Just, where did this inception come from? How long have you guys been doing it? And just the passion to have a radio show talking footy.
It literally started with our sporting director, Jerry Reynoso, who's been on Teed Up before. He had an idea going into last summer going into the fall semester that, you know, we cover games, we broadcast them live on the radio, but we don't really have any individual shows that we can talk about sport that we really like. And it came down to, you know, pick two to three sports that you'd want to host. And he kind of assigned them. Everyone wanted to do football or baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Desi and I were really the only two that were like, we want to talk soccer, you know, we'll talk some footy. And it's funny because we both found out that we were both Tottenham fans live on our first recording. It was kind of like, that was the moment that we figured out both of us were Spurs fans. So it was cool because it was kind of like, oh, we're going to have fun doing this. This will be good. But yeah, it literally just came down to us two being the only two guys at 22 West Radio that were interested enough to talk about soccer for an hour every Friday.
It's so funny you mentioned that too, because it kind of came down to that one moment during our first show where we kind of had that realization that, like, oh, we're both fans of the same team. Like, we hadn't even talked about it before that day. So, like, having that realization during that show was pretty crazy.
Just something to, like, share that internal dread.
Yeah, kind of. But also just like, okay, this guy gets it. Like,
yeah,
it was a good bonding moment for sure, but definitely kind of, and we had no idea what we were doing when we first started. I think that first episode was probably one of our weaker ones, but there was a lot of nerves, a lot of disorganization, but I don't even like to say that we're organized now. It's a pretty loose structure. I mean, you've been on it, but it's good to just get out there and just have a conversation about new trends this week. And we didn't even, like, today's episode, we didn't even have time to talk about the big matchup this weekend between Manchester City and Liverpool because we were so invested in whatever we were talking about. So that's what's really cool about it.
There's a lot of things too that we talk about that are like kind of separate from usually what people would discuss. Like, we talk about the Mexican League. We talk about a lot of specific MLS things. And that's just kind of what makes it fun. You know, it's a lot more laid back than people might expect. And I think that's what makes it really interesting.
Yeah. And then is this a sign where you're like, you want to catapult a career into like talking footy? Or is it just almost like fun? Because everyone has these sports that they like, kind of look like if that's what they want to go into. Like, mine's baseball. But there is so much fun in talking footy and just seeing like where the space is continuing to grow. And especially now in the U.S.
Yeah. For me, I think like it could go both ways for me. Like, I love talking footy just for fun. But I also think like professionally, that's definitely something I would hope to pursue in my career. But like, I think it's just something that in a career you want to have fun. Like, you want to be enjoying what you're doing. And I feel like if you do the both those things at the same time and like I'll also have a successful career, I mean, that's a dream come true.
Yeah, for me, I'm kind of on the same boat as Matty G. Like, I always thought if I want to be in sports, I'm going to be doing something with baseball because that's my number one sport. And then the more I learn and talk about soccer, it's like, well, I think there's a potential future for me in this and just covering it, whether it's out here in America or studying abroad and doing stuff out there. I think that opens up a lot of new avenues, and it's just something I never considered until I got involved with Footy Fridays.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the YouTube space has become big for soccer in general. Like, you can look at creators like Vizza, Stump Peg, Away Days, Zealand. Is there any creators that you look at and kind of like look up to?
I'd say I started out watching a lot of 90th Minute. I don't know if you've heard of them, but it's like five guys that just literally, it started with them getting together and doing a FIFA career save together where they each have a team that they're in charge of and they're all in the same league playing against each other. But they definitely know a lot about soccer, not just from a FIFA perspective. So that's kind of how I started out. But I really like anything that the like TIFO football put out. It's just really well made. And I'm blanking on the name of the Instagram account, but there's an account that kind of breaks down tactics from a really cool perspective, kind of like a whiteboard with the markers, moving them around and just seeing how formations work, what doesn't work. I'm mad that I can't think of the name of it right now, but I'll definitely get back to you on that.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I'm blanking on the name of this podcast. I believe it's a podcast, but there's a YouTuber I used to watch a long time ago and I used to be really into FIFA. I think his name's Reeve. And he's a YouTuber, but he's on a podcast now with a bunch of other guys and they're all Arsenal fans. So it's really fun to listen to them talk about it, even though it's like, obviously as a Tottenham fan, you know, pretty much arch rivals. But it's kind of fun to listen to and just watch them talk about things. And like they rate teams, they rate players and stuff. And it's like, it's kind of fun seeing the other perspective on football, just because, you know, you can kind of get one side in your beliefs if you think your team is the best team. And like, you know, you can never really think that, you know, there's always other teams that are good, but it's always fun to listen to Arsenal fans talk about some interesting topics when it comes to Tottenham.
Yeah. And then there's oozing expressions. Expressions is kind of like the one Tottenham fan that's out there kind of making a name for himself on social media. And he's blown up. I mean, he's really like done it as far as like a social media content creator, and the fact that he's a Tottenham fan and he's very out there and eccentric, like, it makes me happy. So
going away from the actual sports side of it, are we at all invested in like football kits as being fashionable? I mean, it's become such a big thing now where you see people wearing kits, like Kim Kardashian wears vintage Italian kits. And do we think you can like wear a kit of a team you don't support? Would you wear a kit of a team you don't support?
See, I'm a little conflicted on this just because I feel like a lot of times certain players move clubs, and if you're a really big fan of a certain player, it's hard to like watch him wear a different kit and like want to support him and like wear that kit. But like for me, I mentioned before my favorite player is Christian Eriksen, but these days he plays for Manchester United. So it's like, it's kind of hard for me to think about buying or purchasing a Manchester United kit, even though it's for my favorite player. But I think they're definitely fashionable. I think you can definitely wear them in a lot of different situations that you might not expect.
I think for me, as long as you don't play for Arsenal, you might see me wearing your jersey.
I'm supportive of that. I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, for me, when it comes down to, like, most of my kits are Spurs kits, and then I've got a PSG one. I'm not a big PSG fan, but I mean, it's an Mbappe jersey. I figured I should get one of those. But yeah, I mean, as long as you're not, as long as it's not an Arsenal kit, I would consider dropping some money on it.
And Zach, you've been around for a couple of these, but it's time to jump into a little Frank break.
Frank break.
A classic. Footy Scran. I mean, another thing that's really like kind of cemented footballing culture is such a thing. The Twitter account, massive. You guys ever catch on to like these massive sausages you can find just at like every European stadium at every European away day?
I would have to, I'd have to look more into it. I know that's a big thing in the Bundesliga with their brats, but I'm sure that's like a staple as far as like, you know, there's pies, you know, that you eat.
But classic pie.
Yeah, but I feel like the what these are a lot more well known across outside of just the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like if I ever was to go to Europe, that would be one of the things on my bucket list to get a dog somewhere. Doesn't matter where. I just need to get one, you know, to cross it off the list.
You know, friend of the pod, friend of you guys, Jerry's Club, LAFC, they have their own hot dog with Pink's, the LAFC dog, 9-inch stretch dog topped with grilled steak, coleslaw, yummy barbecue sauce. Are you rating that a scran?
It's Americanized. I'll say that. It's Americanized scran. And if it's Pink's, I'll try it. I love Pink's. And I'm into it for the grilled steak and the barbecue sauce. I could probably do without the coleslaw. Not a big fan of coleslaw, but you know, for the sake of the flavor profile of this LAFC dog, I'll give it a shot.
I can back that. I think as an LA dog, it's going to have to do a lot to beat the Dodger dog. I'll just say that.
Well, we talked
that's
about
controversial.
Before.
We've
talked about the Dodger dog before. Apparently, the quality has gone downhill since they've changed branding.
I think so. I think the Dodger dog was really underwhelming when I went to a game last year.
I mean, it's better than an Angels dog, but that's for other reasons.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. And then going to the question side of the Frank break, do we know what "sent for a hot dog" means in football?
I can't say I do.
I'm lost on that one.
Phil Foden mentioned it in the podcast I was watching. Pretty much it just is like when you get the opposition player to slide tackle and totally miss you, you get sent for a hot dog.
Sounds like a British expression, honestly.
Yeah. Did he coin that or did he just like...
I couldn't find out. It was just like I looked up hot dogs and it was just Phil Foden sent for a hot dog. I looked up what it meant and there's an Urban Dictionary definition. So I was like, good enough for me.
So was Phil Foden the first one to go sent that was sent for a hot dog or did he go for a tackle and just miss badly and he was like... patient zero, basically?
It doesn't look like it. The definition came out in 2015. I mean, Phil Foden was, what, probably 15?
15, yeah.
And then the last thing for hot dogs today, we got Women's Super League, International Women's Day today. Shout that out. Women's Super League clashed last year in May, Chelsea versus Liverpool. It got abandoned after 6 minutes, and so they went to play the second fixture, and Chelsea's head coach ended up giving out free hot dogs to every single person in the stands.
The head coach did?
Yeah.
Was that like a thank you for coming back to watch this type of thing? I like that. I think more teams should do that. I know it's not common for full games to get suspended like that, but any type of gesture like that is much appreciated from an outside perspective.
And then jumping up to what's like biggest coming up, at least internationally and in the U.S. on our soil, Gold Cup, World Cup in the U.S. How do we feel kind of about a Gold Cup where all these South American teams are coming to the U.S. versus we could have sent our team to hostile countries where it would have been so much more fun. Like seeing our players play against ultras, there's going to be no passion here.
I don't know. What do you have to say about that? I know you kind of follow that tournament a little bit more.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think historically that tournament's kind of been, I don't want to say underwhelming, but it's just been a little bit different than the kind of international tournaments you're thinking about. But I don't know. I feel like as the MLS has kind of grown over the last few years, they've kind of developed a different style of play, even though it's like, it's kind of the same style of play they've always had. It's just a little bit quicker. And obviously that's what you want from the MLS. But yeah, I think we talk about the Mexican League a lot and a lot of different Central American countries, but I think they bring a different kind of fire when they play. And I feel like that's what kind of draws people into those tournaments.
I think it all has to do with, you know, it's all about money and the fact that the U.S. is starting to host all these tournaments. They're going to be able to make money to like support the future of where they want the sport to go domestically and internationally. I think that's what it comes down to. That's why teams like Real Madrid and PSG, even Newcastle nowadays, are able to like have such a support system and a backbone because it's all financial. It comes down to numbers. And that hasn't existed in the MLS in the US as far as that financial support for the sport. But it's growing, and obviously Messi has a lot to do with that, but that's not going to be like that forever. So it's a matter of everyone else who can buy in, knowing that Messi isn't going to be here forever and that there's a future for US men's national team.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead of me there, Messi, but just Messi MLS, we don't buy into it then at all?
I mean, I think it's a good way to get people drawn in now, mm-hmm. and it's just a matter of will they stick around when he's gone. And I think I think there will be a chunk of supporters who stick around, whether Messi's gone or if he stays until he's 45, 50. But I do think there will be people that like, moving on to the next, you know, which is unfortunate because I do think that's kind of what they're trying to do is build up a fan base with or without him.
Yeah, I think if you're a fan of the MLS now and you were a fan before Messi came to the league, it's kind of like the league looks different. Mm-hmm. You know, like you don't really see a lot of fans that are, you know, true Inter Miami fans before Messi came there because, like, I mean, how many of them were there really?
I mean, they were a pretty new club too, yeah. But you've got a point. I mean, that's all it took for them to invest and start buying $400 tickets.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, I think when you think about the MLS, at this point you think about Messi, but again, like you mentioned, it's not going to be like that way forever. And if you're, you know, the top heads of the league, your coaches in the league, like you have to have a plan for afterwards. And I don't think they're really focused on that right now. They're just focused on making the most money possible.
Yeah, it's really sad, even when you look like in the present, they're already making the wrong decisions. MLS Open Cup, just like completely ruining the oldest club competition in the U.S., right? Bringing all the MLS teams out. I think there's only 8 participating now, putting in MLS next. That's a rough time, but we have the World Cup upcoming. Do we think football's coming home? Because I'm really back in this 2026 men's national team.
You've got reason to. They've got all the talent, and I do think they're capable of going on a run. It's just a matter of what are other teams looking like at that period? Because I think teams like Belgium are kind of trending downwards. Their mm-hmm. golden generation is kind of expiring. But then you've also got new teams coming up, like Japan has established themselves as like a top threat. Same with Morocco. There's just so many teams. It's truly one of the greatest, if not the greatest competition across all sports, because there's just so many teams going into it. There's so much at stake. But I do think that if USA were to go on a run, even just making it to the quarterfinals or the semifinals, that would do astronomical things as far as building momentum going forward and like making it not a priority, but an incentive. Like, we want to win this tournament. We want to get better at this sport.
Yeah, I think 2026 is probably the best chance the U.S. men's national team has had in a, you know, pretty decent while when it comes to the World Cup. But I also think what they've kind of struggled with in the past has been scoring goals. And that's kind of what you saw in 2022 in Qatar, is that they didn't struggle to score goals, but at the end of the day, it wasn't enough. And they didn't have the attacking prowess that you kind of need in a World Cup to kind of string wins together and string goals together. And, you know, they have Pulisic, they have guys like that. And I just think they need a number one striker. And I was kind of hoping that Balogun was going to be that guy.
Yeah.
But I don't know where he's at in his progression at this point. But I think, again, this might be their best shot they're going to have in a while because they got some young studs. But it just depends, like Zach said, about how the rest of the squads are looking in the national teams.
We got a number 9 kicking in Norwich, up the Josh Sargent.
Josh Sargent, that's right.
It's my goat.
I mean, there's guys that are proving to be staples for European teams. I mean, Pulisic is having probably the best season of his career at AC Milan. Weston McKennie has kind of been like solid, you know. Mm-hmm. He hasn't had too many high points, but he hasn't really had any low points. He's just there, and he does his job. He does what's asked out of him, and he's doing it at a big club like Juventus. So we just need more of those. I mean, Sergiño Dest, he's had highs, he's had lows. You know what I mean? I think it's a matter of being more consistent with your performances, not just for your country, but for your club as well. And like that'll kind of establish the bar for what you should expect out of a U.S. men's national team player.
And do you think we can establish an ultras culture here? I mean, I don't know if you guys saw what happened at the Roma-Brighton game yesterday.
I saw something.
Got stabbed.
Yeah.
And then showed up the next day to the game. Just like ultra culture is kind of, I think, what makes football for most people, like pyros, all these things. We had pyros in the MLS last year, and the league shut it down.
They shut it down pretty quickly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Jerry certainly had a lot to say about that because it was with his club, LAFC, and it was for the final, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there is a potential to tap into that culture. It's just a matter of getting people to buy in and keeping it safe, because I think a lot of those crazy ultra sections that you see, whether it's in Belgrade, Serbia, or Prague, Czech Republic, or Paris, there's not a lot of like safety regulations, and I think USA would like prioritize that. So it's a matter of finding loopholes, I think, to get it done and get it and do it in a way that you're not interfering with the character of an ultras club and what it means.
I feel like that type of culture in Europe has been around for a long time, though. Like, those kinds of fans are so passionate about their club or their league that, like, they don't really care too much about the specific problems
that they're going to have.
Exactly, yeah, it's a religion. So I feel like it has to kind of be the same in the MLS, and I don't know if that's going to be a reality anytime soon just because of the state the league is in at the moment and with the fans supporting the clubs. Like, there's definitely support for the MLS clubs, but I don't know if it's on the level of it being a religion for some of these fans like it is in Europe.
Yeah, and then these are coaches that we've both had. Obviously, Bayern, Tottenham. Tuchel versus Mourinho, outside of achievements, just talking like tactics, who did you rate more for Tottenham and just enjoy more as a coach?
You know, I don't think we really got to see what Mourinho could have done for Tottenham. Obviously, I talk about it all the time. They sacked him 5 days before the Carabao Cup final. I mean, granted, it was against Pep and Man City, but Mourinho's a world-class manager. He knows how to win finals, and you robbed him of that opportunity. So we never really got to see what he was capable of doing at Tottenham. But we were talking about it today. I mean, Mourinho led Porto to probably the greatest upset in European football during the – it was 20 years ago in 2004 when they won the Champions League. And I think people forget that you know, he can take a team, an underdog-type team, and – take him to the top. And I think Daniel Levy robbed him of that with Spurs. So I don't think we got to see the full potential of what he could have done in North London.
I completely agree. I also think that his style of football is like, I mean, you know him as a person, but like his style of football is pretty unique for every club he's kind of been at. And I mean, I completely agree with Zach. Like, he did not have his full potential reached in any way. I just also think that there might've been some things that behind the scenes you might not have been seeing from him that were a little bit more controversial than you might have expected from him as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, Maher likes to call it fossil football.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of that, but it was very – there was reason for that. I mean, he's a very defensive-minded, possession-minded coach. I just wanted – one of my favorite Thomas Tuchel moments was last season, which feels like – 5 seasons ago when him and Conte were going at it on the sidelines after that draw between Spurs and Chelsea. And I just think it's funny that neither of them are at their respective clubs anymore. I mean, Tuchel's on to Bayern Munich and not going to be there for long. Yeah. I will say this. I was telling him, so I'm a part of a Bayern Munich fan club that is based in La Habra.
Yeah.
And I get an email blast every week. Mm-hmm. And Nicole is the president of the fan club, but she also works at the restaurant that they meet at. And she sent out a blast like 2 weeks ago after they announced that he's going to resign at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And this is the first two sentences of the email blast. It says, well, you have good news and bad news. The good news is Tuchel's fired, or he's going to resign at the end of the season. The bad news is we have to wait till the end of the season for him to be gone and start things fresh. So mixed emotions there, but it'll be interesting to see what he does for Bayern at the end of the season. Cause I told him, they're probably not going to win the Bundesliga. They're going to have to put all their chips on the table for the Champions League. Can he do it? Because he did it with Chelsea. So yeah. I think they're fully capable of doing so.
Yeah, I mean, I hold Mourinho in like the highest regards. You touched on the Porto win, but then there's also the Inter win of the oldest team to ever win a Champions League and just what he did for Roma. But Thomas Tuchel is like super Tommy to me. I mean, that Chelsea team had no business really winning a Champions League. And he somehow led us there and then got sacked prematurely for Graham Potter and then now Poch. And it's just, I want Tuchel back. I really do. I want Mourinho back. I just want a sense of my club.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before because, I mean, we certainly know a lot about Poch, the former Spurs manager, but it seems like he's completely changed. Like, this is not the Poch that was at the helm of Tottenham during the years where they kind of started to establish themselves as a true top six team. And like, we're going to make the Champions League consistently. We're going to play entertaining football. And now it's just a lot of putting the blame on either Todd Bowley or the lack of players that they have due to injury.
Yeah, it's a tough time. I saw today we had like so many more players out injured. I think Levi Colwill, Connor Gallagher. It's just, this class not a relegation fight. It's where it felt like it was going.
Yeah, they are a true mid-table team this season, and it's just wild considering how much money has been invested into that not just even the starting 11, like the roster as a whole. I mean, it's pretty astronomical.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys saw this, but the other day, Eden Hazard was in an interview with somebody, and he picked Nicholas Jackson to win the next Ballon d'Or.
Ooh.
So I don't know if I don't know what he was thinking there, but
he's onto something.
He might be a future teller.
I mean, Nicholas Jackson did say that Benzema missed all of his chances when he was the same age. So Benzema's won a Ballon d'Or. Maybe it's on the cards.
On the cards.
Maher likes to say he can't finish his dinner, but he's not been terrible, in all honesty. And then the biggest question of footy is always one thing. Messi, Ronaldo, where do we stand?
I think I know where Zach stands on this, so I'll let him go first.
I am torn. I've back and forth. I grew up a CR7 fanboy because I grew up playing forward. I was a striker when I played in my youth days. And I think physically he's got all, in his prime, there was no stopping him. He's going to win a header. He's going to bend it behind the goalie. He's going to hit a power shot. He could do it all. But what Messi does on the pitch, let me put it this way. They each can do things that the other respective cannot. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just two sides of the same coin. I think they're both the coach in their own respective ways. As I've gotten older, I've started to lean towards Messi because of his ability to, his vision of the field is next to no one. And what he brings out of his teammates is something that Ronaldo doesn't. Ronaldo's more like, I'm going to carry. Messi's like, I'm going to make everyone else around me better.
Yeah, I genuinely think this debate is probably like, it might go down as the biggest debate of all time, even though for me, it was kind of decided a little over a few years ago when Messi won his first World Cup. And I know for a lot of people, that was like, that was it for Ronaldo. Like, that was it for the debate. But I always think back to like the prime days for both of them when they were actually like shot for shot, you know, doing things that nobody else had ever seen. And I just think that was the most fun I think I've had watching football when everybody was just going crazy for both of those guys. But I've always been a Messi guy. I think him on the cover of FIFA back in the day, FIFA 14, FIFA 15, I think he was on the cover for like 4 or 5 years straight or something like that. You can't beat it for me. And I think he's definitely the best of all time.
I'm firmly a Messi fan as well. I think if I had to make a Mount Rushmore of least favorite athletes, it goes somewhere along the lines of like Ronaldo, Albert Pujols, Kurt Suzuki.
Pujols is catching strays.
Yeah, Pujols.
Wait, did you just say Kurt Suzuki?
I hate that.
What did Kurt Suzuki do to you?
I just thought he was the worst catcher ever when he was on the Angels.
And yeah, he's no Jeff Mathis.
No, love Jeff Mathis. Yeah. Beautiful man. But he's a goat. Jeff Mathis. Don't have a fourth right now, but Ronaldo, I just can't stand him. I think he's like not humble in the slightest, just like an awful person.
I thought his decision to go to Saudi Arabia was a little money hungry. Mm-hmm. I think he knew that he'll be financially stable. He'll basically get treated like a king over there. But I don't think he didn't need that in his life. Yeah. And he still chose to do that. Whereas Messi, a little more humble. Obviously, he's getting paid a lot of money to go play down in South Florida. But I still think that he's changed certainly my perspective as far as how professional athletes should carry themselves, especially in the latter half of their career post-prime. So,
did we see the Haaland comments from the other day where at the Ballon d'Or PFA Player of the Year, maybe, I forget which one, Ronaldo pretty much like gestured to Haaland saying he should have won it over Messi and like was trying to like make a remark with him, and then Haaland came out and said he thought Messi was the greatest player of all time.
No, that's pretty funny though. Haaland, he's such a nice guy. Like, I don't like that he's playing for City and tearing up the Premier League, but he's just such a likable guy, so I respect him for that. And yeah, I think maybe he probably grew up watching both as a kid and just doesn't want to get caught picking between mom and dad. You know, that's how I see it. But Yeah, what a gesture.
I agree, especially after Ronaldo's trying to kind of create something out of nothing, mm-hmm. especially in regards to Messi winning a Ballon d'Or that, I mean, to be fair, it was controversial that he did win that, but at the same time, it's not Ronaldo's place to kind of go out like that, you know?
Well, a lot of people were kind of expecting Haaland to kind of be Ronaldo's replacement, whether it was going to be at Man United when Ronaldo went back for his second stint there, or if he was going to sign with Real Madrid and take over there. Either way, I think people look at Haaland and expect him to be the next Ronaldo, where he's just like, hey, man, I just want to go out and play football. I'm not trying to be anyone other than Erling Haaland. So respect him for that front.
He's humble.
And then before we wrap up, I know you guys do your fantasy lineups each week. It's on the cards that we're going to be competing.
Yeah.
What's the high score for you guys? And then I know it was unofficial. The Liverpool-Chelsea squad we picked on Footy Friday, 81.8.
Ooh, that's like, we beat them by 0.2 then.
Yep.
We scored a flat 82 last week. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be neck and neck throughout the season if we continue to do this segment. But yeah, I think that was really the first segment that we came up with that we thought had potential. And then we started doing the graphics where our viewers can actually see, which of course our cameras have been down the last like 2 weeks. But it's still fun to kind of, and it forces you to keep up with players and teams that aren't just your own. And it really exposes yourself to leagues and teams that you're not really familiar with and forces you to like learn about them.
I was going to say, it's also fun to just like kind of dive into the numbers of specific teams and players, because like there's guys you don't even know that are going off in like the Dutch league or something. And it's like, oh man, I would have never have known this if we didn't make this starting 11 this week and see this guy who's been tearing it up, you know? And I just love that about football, because all over the world, like, it's so passionate in different countries. And I would have never have known that if I wasn't for starting 11.
Juan Brunetta will always be a Footy Fridays goat. Yeah. He plays for, well, now he's at Tigres, but he was at Lyon, and this guy's putting up like 7.5, 8s like every time. And then the 1 week where we needed him to do just that, to break our record, he did it. So like he solidified, he's on our Mount Rushmore.
Mr. Reliable.
Mr. Reliable. But yeah, it's cool. I think, what's our record this week? 82.6.
82.6?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's,
we'll come for it.
That's kind of the bar. I think we were realistically trying to shoot for 85 as like an overarching long-term goal to get to. And then from there, maybe we can get to 90, but it's tough. Yeah. It's tough to do on a consistent basis.
Well, thank you guys both for coming on. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, indeed.
Thank you so much for joining us for season 3, episode 8 of Teed Up. Thank you to our video editor and producer, Aiden Swanepoel, and our multimedia producer, L. Nicklin. If you want to stay up to the date on the latest in Long Beach State sports, check out our website, daily49er.com, and follow us on socials at daily49er. Thank you. Catch you in the next episode.
Tune into Footy Fridays.
Footy Fridays. Follow 22 West. We love all of our multimedias on campus.
Happy International Women's Day.
Woo!